Okay, Marcel, I'm sorry I interrupted when you tried to do the introduction.
All good.
Welcome, everyone.
No, I do that a lot. I interrupt you, and I really want to apologize. It's shitty, man. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Let me try this again. Welcome, everyone. Is that too timid? You got to start me over. You can't let me do that. That's stupid.
No, that's fine. I didn't say anything that time.
Yeah, but you're supposed to. That's when you're supposed to say something and stop you.
No,
from
I know. Exactly. I know what I'm doing.
Oh.
Well, we've been doing this cast for 4 years. I know exactly this dance we do every time.
Yeah. Okay. So here we go. Let's do it for real. Welcome, everyone, to a very special episode of Brainstorm Brewery, the podcast you've been waiting for. We're here at episode 201. Yep, it's not 200. I don't care what you say. You're wrong. So anyway, this is the set review episode. You're going to love it because we're talking about Eldritch Moon. And according to Ryan, this is probably the best set since New Phyrexia. You feel very strongly about this set, right?
Yeah, I mean, somebody mentioned that to me, and I've kind of been carrying it since. Like, I really think that this set is just all around great. I mean, Jason's going off about the commander cards. It looks exciting for Standard. It looks exciting for Eternal. Almost every rare or mythic in the set feels like it's in place and is good. I mean, there are definitely some you look at and you're like, you know, like, maybe not, but it's very small amount where I'm just going to identify instantly bulk. And I mean, I think there's going to be a number of cards in this set that we're going to see potentially a Goblin Rabble Master effect where it starts off cheap just because there's so many good cards. And then one of them, you know, week two is going to be a $5-6 card. I don't think by any means have we identified everything yet.
And I think there are going to be good cards that don't get there because there can't be so many decks that every card needs to be built around. So I kind of think that some prices could change a while from now. So it's really interesting to see how this pans out, but this set is just so dense with good stuff that is everything going to be expensive or is everything going to be cheap? It's hard to know.
So we don't have Corbin here, and don't worry, you don't have to worry drowning on about the same thing that Jason's going to say anyway. So we condense this podcast even more.
And see, it's funny you can say that and insult him because he'll never hear it.
This is the truth. But we had Corbin earlier. We recorded a different podcast, special guest. That's going to be the next episode after that. So you'll tune in and you'll hear that. And Corbin's there with all his Corbinness. But we're going to do the set review different like we did the last time that we did it. It's not going to be like we've done in years past where we go through each rare and give it a rating and such. We're just going to go through the top price cards, uncommons included. And we're going to, what's the cutoff point? The
$2 TCG market price now, since there's only one price on TCG player.
Oh.
We'll talk more about that next week. We're going to try and focus just on the release this week.
Well, in a nutshell, how do you feel about that?
I think it's great. I think anyone who is concerned about it was probably trying to scum people with those numbers. I think it's a lot less confusing for people who don't necessarily keep up with prices as well. And I think it's a very good representation of what's, when there's buyouts, what's actually being bought out because it's in demand and what is being bought out because one or two people are trying to get some kicks and trying to pump a card. And I'm hoping that because it's only showing when things actually sell now rather than, you know, just whatever it's listed for, because some jackass can't come in and jack the medium price up by listing for $100. It has no effect on that market price anymore, which is great.
TCG player was kind of a catalyst for buyouts before because a small percentage of the total copies could be representative of all the copies. Because if you bought out TCG player, everybody went on the internet and said, oh no, the card's bought out. When in reality, somebody bought 10 copies, but it's gone on TCG player. Instead of people saying, oh, there's more copies everywhere else, they're like, we better go buy those other copies because the card's being bought out. So I think they responded to that. I think this is an excellent way to deal with that. TCG player was very responsive to their role in the current buyout crisis. I think Chetty wrote some good code, and Corbin's opinion was that he's happy that he's associated with TCG player, and I think this is ultimately good for the market.
Awesome. Positive news in Magic. We don't get that often, so let's embrace this and move into the set review. We got Gisela, the Broken Blade, as the top card for the set. If you don't know Gisela, this is the premier flip card or meld card that we're going to have. Flying, first strike, lifelink, 4/3 for 2 and 2 white. And then you flip it over to the new card, the Grizzella, but we'll talk about that when we get to the other half, or do we talk about both halves right now? How do you want to do that?
We should probably talk about both halves right now. I mean, I think this will be the exception, because I think the other one's actually going to be under the range anyway. It's okay. Probably both or close to. So we might just want to cover them now so we make sure we actually hit it. Because I think its relevance doesn't necessarily depend. I think they're very different cards. Like, they get played, one gets played in Commander, one gets played in Standard, and whether or not they make the crossover is really going to depend.
Well, I think Bruna's a very good commander, so that puts upward pressure on the price of Gisela. Because if you're going to run Bruna as your commander, why not run Gisela? Bruna can buy you back a dead Gisela out of the graveyard, and you can make a Brazella. So I actually think the better Bruna is, the better Gisela is, finance-wise.
Interesting. So Bruna, if you didn't know, Bruna's expensive, and that's just in its cost, not in its price. It's 5 and white-white for a 5/7. It has flying and vigilance. And when you have both of these cards out together, they meld over to Gisela, Brazella, I'm sorry.
It flips into Brazella, Voice of Nightmares, which is an Eldrazi angel. It's got flying, first strike, vigilance, and lifelink. And it says your opponents can't cast spells with converted mana cost 3 or less, which is a lot of the ways that you can get blown out with like a Path to Exile or something like that. So Brazella, I honestly think it's worth flipping into in Commander. But I think the most relevant part of Bruna the Fading Light is when you cast it, you can return target angel or human creature from your graveyard to the battlefield. So it's not exactly Angel Glory's Rise, but I think, you know, if you've got something relevant in the yard, maybe even a dead Gisela, you can buy that back. So that's why this is good for Commander, and that's why I think people making Brazella and Commander is a good thing. But Ryan, you're absolutely right. Bruna the Fading Light right now is $1.50. Which means cheap foils, which means you definitely buy a cheap foil angel. What's wrong with you? Especially because it'll be foil on both sides.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I didn't even think
about that. Oh, you know what sucks, though? Because you don't want to have a foil Bruna and then a non-foil Gisela.
Yeah.
So that sucks. If Gisela is like a $70 foil, nobody's going to want to buy a $3 foil Bruna. I didn't think of that. Finance is hard.
They'll still want it. It's still an angel, right?
Gisela's dumb. She's got so many abilities. It's not quite a Baneslayer, but man, it's 4 mana. It's one of the most aggressive angels I've ever seen.
So I think EDH is really where you're going to see it. It may see some Standard, but I mean, are you going to see a control deck that ultimately you sacrifice or you put Bruna or Gisela in the graveyard and then you bring it back with Bruna? And then that's your combo?
I honestly don't think you care about Brazella. In Standard, I think Gisela's good enough on her own. I don't know if that you want to trifle with a 7 mana angel in Standard.
Yeah, I can't see that.
I think Gisela's just so aggressive.
Yeah, I can see that. That's man.
And then if you went like Voltron with this in EDH and threw a couple equipment and auras on her, she's just unbeatable. So many abilities.
Calm yourself.
Woo!
So the next card with so many abilities, and there are some good abilities. It's Tamio, the Field Researcher. We're expecting a Tamio, and we got one. It's Bant colored. So one and Bant for a 4 loyalty planeswalker. So you want to read all the abilities, Ryan, because you love this card more than anything else. So, you know.
Oh, I do.
You're the only one that's going to give it justice.
Yeah. I mean, maybe. We'll see. So the first ability is choose up to 2 target creatures. Until your next turn, whenever either of those creatures deals combat damage, you draw a card. The -2 is tap up to 2 target non-land permanents. They don't untap during the controls next time tap step. And the -7 is draw 3 cards. You can emblem. You may cast cards from your hand without paying their mana cost. Non-land cards. So this card is the best of everything, right? Like, I mean, this card's amazing.
It's so good.
It does, like, it's +1. You can use aggressively, you can use defensively. Even if you're playing this card to absorb some damage and draw 2 cards, like, yeah, it's not ideally where you want to be, but it's still not. That doesn't make it bad by any means. And it just gets better from there. I mean, if that's the worst this card is, as long as this is castable, and I think Oath of Nissa is a huge push for this card, I mean, this card's phenomenal. Like, I actually wouldn't be surprised if this is underpriced.
I mean, for a Planeswalker at around $21, that seems
it depends.
Possible.
It depends on Modern and Legacy play. And I say Modern and Legacy play, I think this definitely makes Modern. If this breaks into Legacy, especially if it breaks in early, you could absolutely see this card above 30.
I think playing this for 4 mana, going up to 5 loyalty and tapping down a like the Delver and maybe a Tarmogoyf, that's possible. That's good enough for Legacy. The really the issue is there's like no good Bant deck right now in Legacy.
Right.
And also,
well, I mean, you have like Stoneblade, but it's just not as good.
Yeah, being in 3 colors just kind of blows right now.
Yeah, it does.
But I don't know. It's better in Legacy to be in 3 colors. It's way easier. So I think Tamiyo, it's so good. I think the fact that it's 3 colors is why they were able to make it so good with so many good abilities. So I think if this has a deck, this could be a $50 card, and if it doesn't, it could be a $15 card. So we just really have to see how willing people are to do the work to put this in a deck. Because you can't just jam this in a Bant Coco deck and call it a day. You really have to do some work to find a deck that really benefits from this ability. So I think this could be underpriced, though.
I think it's about right. I think it's going to depend on standard play. And I think outside of Oath and Nissa, you're not going to have much of a deck there. So, I mean, it's a good card, but I think it's going to be a little bit tougher. That's just my opinion. I think it may go down to... I don't think it's a $15 card, but 20s... Yeah, it could go to 15, but 20 is definitely right.
It just kind of depends on the rest of the set, doesn't it? It depends how much slack this needs to take up. But if everything else in the set's good, this could be played in every deck and still be 20 bucks. I don't know. It just kind of depends.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big push, too. I guess I hadn't thought about that. It's like how good the rest of the set is comparatively and what that's going to do to the really good cards prices because you're not just supporting, you know, on one or two cards.
Well, I think based on the fact that this next Planeswalker is also 22 bucks, I kind of think Tamiyo is going to have to take up a lot of slack for this card because I'm actually really not impressed.
Not a Liliana fan, huh?
I named my daughter Liliana, so what do you think?
Well, I mean, not a fan of this Liliana, I guess I should say.
I mean, she's, for a 3-mana Planeswalker that can do a very good job of protecting herself, she's certainly aggressive. I just don't know if I care about her other ability. Let's just read her. She's 1 colorless and 2 black for a 3 starting loyalty Planeswalker, which is, it's pretty aggressive. Her +1 is up to 1 target creature gets -2/-1 until your next turn. So it can kill smaller stuff or just shrink enough stuff that they can't kill it. Her -2 is you put the top 2 cards of your library into your graveyard, then you may return a creature card from your graveyard to your hand. And her -7 is you get an emblem with, at the beginning of your end step, put X22 black zombie creature tokens onto the battlefield where X is 2 plus the number of zombies you control. So this, it's going to get out of hand really fast. You don't even need to be playing zombies in the deck for this to just start going nuts with this emblem. So,
it really depends on how good that first ability is and how much that plays. I think it's looks underpowering because it's just the -1 on the toughness, but that -2 is going to slow down a lot of creatures and allow you to get to the later game longer. So, I mean, the -2 is not that exciting, but I think or in a grindy deck that can utilize this to stretch the game out longer, it becomes more and more valuable.
Yeah, if you don't have a ton of spells to throw in the yard and be like, my spells are in the yard. So her ultimate can get out of hand really fast, though. Like, if they're not killing your zombies, it's just going to snowball out of control. So I definitely like how aggressive she is. I don't know. Usually planeswalkers that are cheap have a decent starting loyalty and or can protect themselves pretty well. I don't know if you want to use this -2 or if you just want to, like, shrink their dudes and race to her ultimate. I just really would have to see how this plays. I haven't done any testing with it. I was just underwhelmed at first, and I think everybody that saw it was a little underwhelmed, but it's possible that the fact that this is a 3-mana Planeswalker is all that anybody really needs to know about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think people have kind of gotten away from that mentality as far as the 3-mana Walker thing goes. I think you're right, like, we don't necessarily know day one, but 3-mana Walkers have proven in the past to be much better than we think they are just because they're 3-mana. And, I mean, we don't have a Birds of Paradise in the format, so that definitely hurts that a little bit. But I also think that we may see... The other problem I have with it, too, is, like, I want to put it in a control, but I also want to put it in an aggro deck. And so it really depends on if we find that deck for it. Because, like, I was trying out in the zombie shell, and it just doesn't do enough. but I feel like control it also doesn't do enough, so you really have to hope that there's a deck in between those two, but I really do like the card overall.
I think if you build around her minus two somehow, you'll probably have a lot more success. I just don't know what deck I want to do that in.
It looks to be a mill deck, just based on how many cards does give you incidental mill, self-mill. I think that there could be a deck there finally, maybe. So we'll see if that actually comes about. If it does, Liliana will be a major role player in that.
What I will say is people like us, and even people that don't evaluate stuff with respect to finance, but do it with respect to playability, everybody is historically pretty terrible at evaluating planeswalkers. I think independent testing you do with planeswalkers is going to be pretty invaluable, and you'll still have a little bit of time. If the card ends up being underpriced, you'll still have some time to figure that out before the price changes too much. So definitely try to find a deck for this.
So you're saying 22, you should get out of it at this price? It's too high?
Do you want to try to trade
them and then get in later?
There are probably more scenarios where 22 is okay than when it's really terrible. I can't see a lot of scenarios where you lose 10 bucks either way by not buying or not selling. So it's hard to see getting super blown out buying at 22 or not buying at 22. So I think the market did a pretty good job of predicting this price.
So another card that got predicted by Ryan is Emrakul, the Promised End.
Yes. Emrakul. Weemrakul.
That was actually a really good story. I like how that worked out. And it worked out perfect for Brexix. It was like, here we go. The madness is coming.
That's fair. I hadn't thought about that. Emrakul's pretty sweet. So let's see. I'll read her off here. Click on
what does she cost? Is that 13?
It's 13 for a 13-13, which is cute.
I got really Triska Tecophobia, so I don't really like that.
It makes you wonder if the negative energy in Innistrad has been Emrakul, you know, considering it has all the 13s in it, and like somehow had a grasp on this world the whole time. Like, is this world going to get a lot better if Emrakul's defeated? Is it no longer going to be Innistrad, dark, you know, zombies and everything everywhere, or what? But, I mean, that's a whole other theory. But anyway, so Emrakul is 13 for 13-13. It costs one less to cast for each type of card among cards in your graveyard. We did not get a Tarmogoyf-style, you know, effect in this set, which is unfortunate. So it was just Emrakul. And when you cast Emrakul, you gain control of target opponent's next turn. And after that, that player takes an extra turn. And then it has flying, trample, and protection from instants.
This is a lot of fun. I don't know about standard, but certainly in EDH, people are already talking about having this be your commander. And like using Ugin's Nexus to make sure they don't take that extra turn. So taking other players' turns is fun. I think this will enable a lot of that. And this is an Emrakul that can be your commander, but isn't super broken like the other one. So I could see building around this and it being pretty decent. Mindslaver effects are typically pretty good.
Yeah. I've always been I've never been excited whenever I cast a Mindslaver, unless it's in a chain. But that was before the time. I wasn't able to do that before Mana Burn went away. So I can understand that being like a major part of mindslaving, destroying a person. But I think in this standard, I mean, an extra turn is not that huge, you know, and they get their turn back. Like being able to dictate some of their cards or cast a removal spell on their creature may happen, but it just seems like a huge setup for a card that doesn't really do a whole lot, in my opinion.
Go ahead.
I think, you know, Ulamog is probably the better Eldrazi to cast if you're going to get there.
If it's part of a soft lock, it has a tendency to feel way worse for your opponents. But, you know, having a soft lock in an EDH game is going to be pretty tough because you're still vulnerable to the other players. So this can be really interesting. I think this is almost certainly overpriced.
Yeah, 15.
Yeah, probably. I think so, too. I think long-term it's not. I think we see Emrakul at 15 again in 4 or 5 years. So, I mean, if you're a person who never gets rid of your cards and you want to buy Emrakul just to have them, I wouldn't feel bad. But I also think that you're going to see a time when this card's $7 or $8 before it's 15 again.
Indeed.
And maybe that's a good time to buy. If you predict a U-shaped graph, definitely buy at the floor.
Yeah, I mean, it's the big Eldrazi. I think we're going to see that going forward with almost every big Eldrazi. It's a very unique cycle of cards. It's kind of like the swords. Like, all of the swords are worth money just because people want to play them in something, and they're always going to sell. I mean, it's just kind of one of those cycles that I think is immune to being bulk ever.
That is fair. Those swords are... Yeah, I remember when I bought my sword for the first time, the red and Red and Blue, and it was just, I don't know, profound effect upon me because the card was just that awesome. And I think, you know, new Magic players see those swords and just go goo goo gaga. It's too easy. The next card.
Oh, man. Back in the day when we had Troll Ascetic to put that on. Woo!
Yeah. I mean, any card with that much text, as long as that text is doing something, is typically going to be good. And, I mean, this card has a lot of text and all of it's relevant.
So the next card is Grim Flayer. This is the why is this mythic? Probably because of this power level card at green and a black for a 2/2 human warrior with trample. Whenever Grim Flayer deals combat damage to a player, look at the top three cards of your library, put any number of them into your graveyard, or on top, back on top of your library in any order. And then there's also Delirium, so if you got four or more different types, he gets +2/+2, becoming a 4/4 for a 2-drop. Which I think you got that plus Sylvan, Advocate, I believe.
Yeah.
So you got those two cards coming down at 2. You can have an aggressive green-black deck that can get there pretty quick. I think the card has legs. I don't know though.
I wish there was something like mulch in the format. You know, something early to get you started on getting stuff in your graveyard. So, you know, there's not a lot that does that. So I don't know if this is going to be like a turn 3, you're swinging for 4 with this thing. But it could be good.
I mean, we do have some. There's the 1-mana enchantment that got revealed that, like, puts a 1 in your graveyard every turn, and then it does something else, too.
Prop Sigil. It's Delirium. Yeah, its Delirium ability is you can pay 2 colorless and a green, sack Crop Sigil, and return up to 1 target creature card and up to 1 target land from your graveyard to your hand.
I mean, that card seems great. Overall, like, it's fine in the late game, even because it's still netting you 2 cards for 4 mana and green, which isn't great, but, I mean, it does have an other ability anyway. You can play it on turn 1 and sit there and 8-point pop that. I mean, as long as there's a couple of good cards like that, there was another one, too, that I can't remember what in the world it is. Now that I'm going through it, like, I'm writing about the stuff for my article this week, so I just can't remember the names. But there's a number of enablers. But, yeah, I don't think it's going to be before turn 4, probably. Like, you're going to have a difficult time playing this guy on 2 and turning him on 3, but it will happen.
I have no idea how to evaluate this card. All these stats just seem so foreign to me. I have no idea how this is going to play out in practice and whether swinging as a 2/2 trample on turn 3 is going to be good enough. I guess I'm a little bit divorced from the standard format, but I think this is going to change the standard format enough that... Is this ready to go in a deck? Does it need a new deck? Like, there's too much uncertainty.
It definitely needs a new deck. There's no real Delirium deck out there right now, and we're pretty well owned by, like, 2 or 3 decks. The problem is those 2 or 3 decks seem like they're going to have a reasonable matchup against this deck. Trample is definitely huge because you can't just block it with a plant token. So, I mean, that might be enough alone to push it over the top, but I don't know. I mean, the best thing it has going for it is that it can get in on turn 3. Well, that is usually the setup turn for these green-white decks. So, like, that's when they're playing their Nissa to make the plant token to block, and this can kind of just ruin that plan a little bit. Hopefully, trigger your Delirium for the next turn so that when they play their Gideon and make another guy, or, you know, you can get over the Sylvan Advocate at that point. Like, Sylvan Advocate's really the big stopper to this card, too, is, like, that comes down as a 2/3 on turn 2. This comes down as a 2/2. So you have to turn that Delirium on before you can actually get through, and if you're wasting 2 or 3 turns doing that, your opponent's built up enough other things that now this card's no longer relevant.
Yeah, I kind of wish we had fetch lands in the format for this guy.
You do. Evolving Wilds.
I mean, that doesn't help you play this on 2.
Sure it does.
If you get a turn 1, sure.
Yeah. I mean, the deck. This is definitely... Evolving Wilds may see more play if Delirium picks up, but it's definitely the quickest way to put a land in your graveyard without just hoping to hit one off of one of the random effects. I mean,
you could get lucky in a turn 3 Liliana puts the last 2 cards in here to give you Delirium here, but man, I just don't see it. And maybe everyone's testing this and it's like the best card they've ever seen. They're like, this is a $40 card and you're all idiots, but I don't know, man. I could see this being like $5 also.
This is interesting so far. All these cards we see, but we have no clear indicator like this card looks like. Is it going to be a staple? Kind of like we saw with Avacyn or we saw with Gideon. Like, we knew the card was definitely going to be in there. So, I mean, that's, I think, good set design, and that they're making it more difficult, and you just got to play. And that seems to be a common thread going through this so far. And I think it carries through to Eldritch Evolution. This is another card that I think the price is too high, but it could be that people are playing it and it turns out to be a really good card. This costs one green for a sorcery, has an additional cost to Eldritch Evolution sacrifice a creature. Search your library for a creature card with converted mana cost X or less, where X is 2 plus the sacrifice creature's converted mana cost. Put that card into the battlefield, shuffle your library, and exile Eldritch Evolution. So you're going to be playing this with Matter Reshaper and get like a 5 drop out of it.
Reality Smasher?
No, dude, Allosaurus Rider. Play that free Allosaurus Rider by discarding 2 green cards. Then Eldritch Evolution, go get a 9 drop and then eat a Path to Exile.
Yeah, I mean, I think the card's it's going to see play. Like, it's good. There's no way to downplay the card. It's powerful.
Collected Company good?
No. Not even close.
I don't think I can say snap no on this. I think that it is less widespread than Collected Company. Like, I don't think you can just jam it in as many decks as you can Collected Company, but I would say power level wise, it could be. Yeah. We don't really have this kind of effect in Modern. I mean, Birthing Pod got banned and you have like quarter calling and stuff, but this is a really efficient for the mana and exactly what it does.
Plus, it just lets you skip way ahead in your curve. You're sacking a Kitchen Finks, and all of a sudden you got access to your 5 drops. Not being able to recur this with Eternal Witness, it seems like good card design.
So do you think it's worth the $9?
Okay. If this is as good as Collected Company, this is a $25 card. If it's not, could be like a $6 card or $5. It's a non-mythic, so that helps. I don't know. I kind of see more upside at 10 or at 9 than downside, but 9 times out of 10 cards like this tend to just kind of go down. So I don't know. I don't think you're going to get super blown out buying at 9. And so I think this price might be okay, actually. That might be unpopular.
Yeah, I think this is right about in there. Yeah, I don't think it's a Collected Company as far as, like I said, how many decks can play it. So that definitely hurts the price. But this one's a big question mark. Week one, if this sees as much play in Standard as people are trying to hype it up to be, it definitely is going to go higher, at least in the short term. But who knows how that translates out to the long term.
I'm going to say it. Go ahead. I think you'll be okay buying these at $9.
Yeah,
I don't see this being a bulk rare ever, so.
Yeah, I definitely don't think you lose at $9. Like, not a ton anyway. Yeah. I wish I had, like, more definitive, but that's really it. It's a giant question mark, right? Like, nobody knows quite how good it's going to be yet.
I'm sort of sensing a theme with this set. It really just kind of depends on whether a deck for it materializes. And I feel the same way about this next card. Spell Queller, which is a colorless, a white, and a blue for a 2/3 flash flyer. It's a spirit, so I guess it could benefit from a spirit deck, but it's also pretty good on its own. When Spell Queller enters the battlefield, exile target spell with converted mana cost 4 or less. And when Spell Queller leaves the battlefield, the exiled card's owner may cast that card without paying its mana cost. So basically, as long as Spell Queller's around that, you kind of O-ring that spell. I think that's a pretty neat design.
Yeah. I think this card is probably a little overpriced at where it's at, just because of how few decks can actually play it, but I think it is a very good card. I think this one's pretty easy to evaluate. Like, it's just value on a stick. We already have decks that can play this color combination. It sits right where Reflector Mage sits as far as power toughness goes. Flying and Flash is huge. It's got a really relevant ability. Like, there's nothing bad about this card. There's no real downside to it, so it should definitely see some play.
But is it an $8 card?
Yeah, and that's I just don't think there's quite enough spirits out there to justify that $8.
I think even if there is, I think even if there's a spirit deck and it's very good, you'd be hard pressed to get $8 for your non-mythic rares for just another deck in the format. You know, like, this would be, maybe it's as good as Thalia's Lieutenant, in the humans deck. But what's Thalia's Lieutenant going for right now?
Exactly. This may have a little more application in Eternal formats, which might be the saving grace, but I'm still not 100% convinced that it slots into any one deck right away. At least not as like a 4 of, and that's what it would take to keep that price.
I think kind of the way it's designed, that you're not going to be cheesing anybody with like Dead Eye Navigator or anything like that. So I kind of think this ends up around 4-450 where Thalia's Lieutenant is, and that's if there's a deck for it. I think there are way more scenarios where this goes to $3 than there are where it goes to 15, where you're glad you bought in at 8. So I'm going to call this a pass. As much as I like it, I do like it, but I think I'm going to pass.
Agreed.
This next card almost certainly overpriced also, and it's a card I sort of like also. It's Thalia, the Heretic Cathar. She's a legendary human soldier for 2 colors and a white, 3/2 first strike. Creatures and non-basic lands your opponents control enter the battlefield tapped. So this is Imposing Sovereign, this is Kismet, it's a worse Kismet if they have a fetch land because they can go get a basic, I guess. I don't know, I don't think a hate bear like this needs to be more than $7. I think, you know, I kind of think this is way overpriced.
I think this is really overpriced.
I don't think it's going to be anybody's commander when you can run Gaddock Teague. So really, I'm not super impressed with this.
Well, another part too is like this card is, I mean, it's 3-drop. Like you're fighting every other 3-drop. That seems to be like the big mana cost this year, as far as like a lot of decks are topping out at 3 mana on their creatures. There's just a lot of things about having to fight for that spot, and this card just doesn't quite get me there. I mean, we just talked about another 3-drop that we're not even convinced might be $8, and that one I think is far better than this one is.
Yeah, plus other Thalia is only $10, so you had lots of opportunities to buy in way cheaper than 10. This was, $3 in 2013, the other Thalia, and that's a much better card than this one, just prima facie. So I kind of think this is a pretty easy pass at $7. I kind of like it better at 3 or 4.
Agreed.
Not that I like it much at 3 or 4. Jeez, I guess hard pass.
Hard pass. Fair enough. Let's see. So what's our next card? Decimator of the Provinces, Craterhoof Behemoth, has been changed into an Eldrazi boar with 3 heads. And I love this card. You cannot cheat it into play like you can the other one. It is a 10-drop total. It has a merge cost, however, of 6 green, 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 so 9. And it is a 7/7 normally. And when you cast it, creatures you control get +2/+2 in-game trample until end of turn. And it is a 7/7 trample haster itself. It does not get the +2/+2 because it is upon cast. So there is that negative of like Craterhoof. Plus you're only giving +2/+2. You're not giving equal to a whole number of creatures. So I don't think this is something that like you're going to necessarily play in like an elves deck. Plus a merge only lets you sacrifice 1 creature. I mean, there's definitely a lot of net downsides that, people are comparing this to Craterhoof. And I think it's a very different card overall.
It's an overrun that you can cast for 3 green mana.
Yes.
Is what it is. So it's not worth cheating into play. So I don't really see Standard playing anything this expensive. Even if you're trying to emerge it, like it's a weird curve topper in Standard, but like I think I could see this in certain EDH decks, maybe with like a lot of tokens, it'd be a good curve topper. But I mean, you wouldn't run this instead of Craterhoof Behemoth anywhere. So this would have to be good enough to be played in addition to Craterhoof, and I don't see that being worth $5.
Nope, not at all. I think it's like a $2 card, $3 card.
It feels mythic, though, so that's the good thing.
That
yes,
it does.
Yeah, it feels very mythic, yeah. I mean, anytime you put something in that, costs 10 mana, it's probably going to feel fairly mythic. So I'm definitely not mad about that.
The next card is Elder Deep Fiend. This is another Emerge card. So people are grasping onto the Emerge. Either they're trying to get it or they feel that, there's good ways to cheat it in and it's worth the hassle. So this is a 5/6 with Flash. So this is a Emerge you can do at instant speed at the end of your turn. So that should be interesting. Cast Elder Deep Fiend, tap up to 4 target permanents. So, I mean, in a way, you can consider this kind of like a Mistbind Click. If you have a 3-drop out there and you cast this along taking back the other thing, then you got this essentially at 4 coming in.
I think this is better. I mean, I would go on a limb and say that this card is underpriced. I think that this card is absurd. I think this starts a whole new archetype that does not necessarily currently exist. And we are going to see people chaining these together, first off, which is scary. And locking down your opponent for multiple turns, as we know from Mistbind Click, can be a very efficient way to win the game. But I don't know. But every time I read this card over again, I see really unfortunate standard states and it worries me, actually. I think this card might be unhealthy for the format.
Matter Reshaper on 3, this on 4? Woo!
Yeah, I mean,
nasty.
You just put your opponent in such a place where they can no longer play the game, and if you have any way to recur these, because it doesn't exile or anything like that, right? Yeah, nice. You just sacrifice the creature. So if you're chaining these together, you can legitimately get yourself to a point where you don't care what your opponent's doing, because they can play two, you know, they have two mana open, and you have a 5/6 that's hitting them every turn on top of whatever else you already had in play. And this thing flies too, right? No, it's just a splash. Okay.
No.
All right.
Oh, yeah, it sucks. It doesn't even fly.
Yeah, yeah, it's garbage. Get it out of here. Hot garbage.
Yeah, so $5. So you pay cash for these?
I almost bought a couple of sets at that $455 range. I went in on a couple other specs instead, but this was on my list of things to buy.
Yeah, I think this is a good way to go in. If you're going to trade for them, you can't do wrong. Yeah, card looks good. This looks like a heavy hitter, especially now that we looks like spirits are on the uptick. This could just fit into a spirit deck.
And just like that, we're down below $5 already.
There's not much depth, yeah. So you're saying that this potential Gisela could hold that price? Tamio could hold that price?
Yeah, I think we're more likely to see a couple of these cards that are below $5 get above that, actually.
This would probably be one of them.
I kind of think the overall price of the set, it seems a little cheap. For the total cost of the set. You've only got a couple cards over 20, and then you've got not that many above 5. So, really, I kind of think the total cost of the set could be worth more than we're at presale. So I think there are a lot of cards with potential to go up. I think stuff can go up without dragging the $20 cards down.
That's good to hear.
I think Geese and Geralf is probably overpriced, unless it impacts standard.
I think that's one of those cards that, because it can fill that grave, I don't think, so I'm reading this card and a lot of people are just like, well, zombies might not make it, so this card's garbage if zombies doesn't make it. But you don't have to play a lot of zombies to make this card okay. Like, this can very much be a utility card because you can keep casting that same zombie. So if you only have 8 to 12 zombies in your deck, there's a chance this card sees play anyway if that first ability is, you know, pivotal to your deck working.
Yeah, 4/4/4 is okay, but it's still a good body for the price.
I mean, right, and you're milling the top 4 cards automatically, which is something that, you know, obviously that deck is really interested in doing. And where is it? Yeah, so like during each of your turns you may cast, oh, okay, it's not during each turn, but either way, you may cast a zombie creature card from your graveyard. So I was trying to think about the zombies that aren't necessarily like something that you have to play everything. And isn't like Keetrog Monster a zombie? Or is it not?
Get rogue monster.
You don't know this by the hip, Jason? What? You're not a real EDH player. You're not even playing with no get rogue if you don't know.
I didn't think it was a zombie, so I had to double check. I knew it was a frog, but it's a frog horror.
Okay.
Uh-oh, Jason, you're losing your EDH credibility right now on air. It's insane.
I mean, not really. I don't know what Maelstrom Wanderer is because it's in Japanese. So I'm sorry I have Japanese cards and I don't know the, I use my Maelstrom Wanderer deck all the time. I don't know what card type he is. It's probably elemental. Who knows? I'm not a nerd. I don't care about lore.
Get out of here, Jason. You're done. You're finished. So next card is Nahiri's Wrath. I don't see this finishing you. I read this the wrong way. I thought I did.
Did you think you could hit players?
Yeah. I was like, oh my God, we got turn 3 kills. Bam! Oh no, we don't.
Yeah. No. I don't know. You could still wipe them out pretty effectively.
Yeah, you could. You could get something good. So this card is a sorcery for 3, 2 and a red. And as additional cast to cost Nahiri's Wrath, discard X cards. Nahiri's Wrath deals damage equal to the converted mana cost of the discarded cards to each of up to X target creatures and or planeswalkers. The more cards you pitch, the more targets you got, the more damage you do, the more you spread it around.
And it's not divided. It's to each. So if you discard 4 3 drops, you can deal 12 damage to 4 targets.
Yeah, but you're still trading like 1 for 1 with cards. Like you really have to benefit from the discarded cards for this to be good. And as a madness enabler at 3 is kind of tough. Yeah, I mean, it's at $4, yeah, I guess it could go down to 3.
I don't know, because I don't know. People were paying $25 for what was that red white card?
Oh, yes.
That are, Chroma's, no, Aurelia's Vengeance or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah, and that ended up like bulk, so I think this can absolutely be bulk. It's sort of a Red Wrath, but God, the cost is so high that what expensive stuff are you playing in a red deck? Like, how much damage are you really going to be doing if you have a bunch of 2 and 3 drops in a red deck with an aggressive curve? So are you going to pitch big stuff and then have no late game? Sure, you wipe their board, but then you got no late game. So it just seems really awkward. I thought this card was way too good the first time I read it, because just like you, I was like, you can get players? No, you sure can't. So I kind of think this is... I think 4 is almost hedging, because 4 is almost never the correct number for this. Because if it's good enough to get play, I think it would be more expensive. And if it's not good enough, I don't think it'll be worth $4. So I don't see a scenario where this is a $4 card. So this price is wrong. I just don't know which way. And I'm inclined to say this is not going to play as well as we think looking at it. I think this is probably worse, and I'm out at 4.
That sounds good. I'm behind that 100%. So now we have the next card at $4. That shows how enthusiastic people are about the legendary werewolf Eldric the Crowlin Horde. I mean, I think Jason, you said it best in the last cast about this is the card people wanted, not the card they deserved.
No, it's the card they asked for, not the card they wanted. I mean, they asked for a legendary werewolf, and they're like, all right, here you go. A red-green legendary werewolf. Enjoy that, you lucky so-and-sos. And everyone's like, I'm just going to keep Rurik Thar as my commander. So since a certain number of people are going to buy this for commander. I think not enough for it to go up from 4 right away. Because, much better generals like than this, like Tazri. Tazri was like the number 4 built deck on EDH Rec, and Tazri was like $2, so... I don't think not being played in standard is going to be enough to save this. So this is really, its price hinges on standard, and I don't know how to evaluate in terms of standard. I think it's better there than it is in EDH, certainly.
Well, this is your 5-drop for Eldric Evolution if you're going to play that in standard.
It's true.
Just kidding. If you think about it, if you have a 2-drop, if you got a 2-drop, and then you put your 3, which would be Mattery Shaper, and then you do Eldric Evolution on 4... Get this guy, you give your 2-drop the +4, +4, goes in and bashes for 6 to 7 damage. I mean, that seems reasonable. Still not enough to propel his price, but that's something you would want to do.
It's hard to know what to do with this card, but certainly playing him as a 5-drop and just giant growthing a creature seems pretty aggressive. I don't know if this goes in a wolf deck or just like some red-green mid-range deck. There are some scenarios where this goes up from 4, but I'm not very excited. I don't know. I'm EDH guy. EDH guy doesn't like it for EDH. What does everybody else think for the other formats?
I don't think red green's getting there, frankly. Like, there's so many other good, exciting things to be doing, and yeah, I'm just not sold. This is where I want to be.
So are you sold on a $4 Tree of Perdition?
This is No, I'm also not sold on the $2 Triskaphobia or whatever it is.
Triskaidekaphobia.
Yeah.
People are trying to make a combo work that's just not meant to be standard combo.
The historic high for Tree of Redemption is $2.80, if that gives you some perspective. Tree of Redemption doesn't quite play the same way, but that's a $3 card, basically forever. I think it'd be funny to kill somebody with Triskaidekaphobia or Tragic Slip This with the ability on the stack. I think that'd be funny too. So there are a lot of ways to KO your opponent with Tree of Perdition. So I think it might be better than Tree of Redemption, but I don't think casuals will like it as much as casuals like Tree of Redemption. And you lose a buck buying it at 4 if this turns into that. So I see a lot of scenarios where you lose money on this.
I mean, this just seems like the most annoying TCG card, or TCG card, EDH card, right? Like, this is just like whoever you target is just like, oh, come on, really? Oh,
well, it's like Magister Sphinx, but this can block for a while. It can come down and start blocking. You know, it can take a lot of hits. You know, aren't a ton of creatures big enough to swing through it. And then when you want to Magister Sphinx somebody with it, you do. So that could be fun. Because this is 27 damage to somebody.
Right. Well, that's what I'm just like. And, you know, I mean, I feel like this is like target number 1 when it hits the table. Like, nobody really wants this to survive because then everyone has to be your friend for a while.
Right.
Yeah. But I mean, I think outside of EDH, like there's a, the Triscuit Decaphobia thing's cute. It's 2/4 drops. There's, I understand it does win you the game. There's a lot of ways to influence it. So it does not win you the game at the instant speed. I pain lands are still in the format. So until all of those factors go away, I'm not even going to look at that combo as real. And yeah, I don't know. Maybe it'll come out and surprise me at the Pro Tour. I will be really saddened, honestly, if that's the state of standard with all the other excitement that's going on. But
right.
If somebody just got Decaphobia as their opponent, I guess they got it.
Yeah,
you the problem is win. Neither card does anything by itself.
Yeah, it's just there. It's just like a half of a combo that you really don't want. I mean, you could also win games just playing good cards, but I'm glad that, you know, this is in the format and that they actually have this combo here, and this is like a casual hit. So, I mean, this is good for the set, and I'm glad it's there, and I'm not mad at it for that.
Yeah, this could sell boosters, so.
So now we have Splendid Reclamation. This is 3 green for a sorcery. Return all land cards from your graveyard into the battlefield tapped. I really like this ability.
God, I love this card. Yeah, I mean, obviously we're all dream scenarioing, but if the Delirium deck exists and it wants to somehow have a ramp late game, like, you can cast an Emrakul or an Ulamog or whatever it is you want to cast. And I mean, Emrakul's ability does play well into the grave, so. There could be, we might be looking at Delirium the wrong way. Maybe Grim Flayer is just a distraction towards the fact that, like, maybe you're not actually even a mid-range deck. Maybe you're just completely a controlled Delirium deck. There are definitely a number of things that that deck likes, and I think this card is absolutely the enabler that that deck potentially needed to exist.
Yeah, but at $354, I don't know. I think the deck needs to come alive before that this card could realize that price. I think it would drop down before it gets
there. I 100% agree. I think the closest thing we can compare this to is Nissa's Renewal. Is that the 6-drop one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So, that's the same kind of card where, like, when I saw that, I was like, this just does what you want to do in a ramp deck. It protects you and it gets you to those high Eldrazi drops. This is going to do the same thing for that, you know, that one subset of deck that can actually play it. And it's probably not going to be a 4 of. I mean, unless that's your entire game plan is just like casting this into an Ulamog. But even then, I don't think you're going to see more than one deck really doing that, because there's only so many cards, and they're not spread across all sorts of colors, so it's not like you're going to be casting, you know, Emrakul or Ulamog across, you know, 3 different decks utilizing this, I don't think. Exactly. So that really keeps the price down. I think this is $1 to $2 rare. It might stay out of bulk just because it's so cool. I don't know. Obviously, Geetrog is a big fan of this, so maybe...
EDH makes this not bulk. The EDH gives us upside long-term. Titania, Sidisi, like,
but this is
anything like dredgy. Right? Yeah, I think this hits a buck before it gets back up to 4, certainly.
Yeah.
So I don't like this at its current price, but this is one of my favorite cards in the set. That's kind of my lot in life as the guy who likes EDH now. I'm just sort of like, yep, love this card. Don't buy it for that, though.
I could see this seeing play in Modern. You know, Seismic Assault or some kind of fun deck like
that.
Yeah.
But it would like be still in that deck, cringe. What are you doing putting all those lands into play? You know what I mean? Like, if you're a Seismic Assault deck, you have a different game plan already.
Yeah,
so, like, sure, you have ways to fill the grave, but then, like, you've put all your lands into play. Even in a dredge deck, sure, you can get infinite lands into play, but then, like, what's the point? You're a dredge deck.
Yeah. Squandered resources, you know, getting a bunch of 5/3s off of Titania. And
yeah, and then you come back to Commander.
Yeah, so, like, I don't really... It's not a good ramp spell for Standard. I don't really know... I'm sure someone will break it. Just because there are so many cards in, like, Origins where, like, that's an EDH card, and then Todd Anderson's like, just kidding, I'm playing Pyromancer's Goggles and Standard, and everyone's like, all right, I guess forget everything I knew about Magic. I just don't see that happening with this.
You do Gregor Gargadon and just sacrifice all your lands and then bring them back.
Well, I mean, there's...
9/7 deal.
Leaner Birth is really underplayed in EDH right now, and I think it's because it's in white.
So, speaking of Commander cards, you want to take the next one?
Oh, yeah. I still think Mirror Wing Dragon is probably wrong at $3, but it's got a great ability. It's 3 colorless and 2 red for a 4/5 flyer. Whenever a player casts an instant or sorcery spell that targets only Mirror Wing Dragon, that player copies that spell for each other creature he or she controls that spell could target. Each copy targets a different one of those creatures. So it's not quite as good as Zada or the Nephilim with that ability, because it only targets your stuff, so you can't be like, aha, I'm Lightning Elixing everything! But, I mean, still, you could draw a bunch of cards with Crimson Wisps and et cetera. I think this is probably a bulk mythic.
It's too much of a liability. You just wipe your board. Like, it has to be the only creature. You want to have a bunch of creatures, but you could get wiped out by one removal spell against him. It's like, it just seems like such a bad for someone that builds a deck around this.
This actually protects you from that. If you read the card, it's that player control. So if they target it with a removal spell, it actually targets all of their creatures with removal spells.
Yeah. That player copies.
So this card could actually, this card could actually, I'm going out on a huge limb here because it's a five drop, it's a dragon, but like this card could be standard playable because of that. I don't think it is, but if this card showed up, like that ability is not just commander. I mean, it does kind of protect itself in some ways from that. And I mean, if you already have like Thunderbreak in a deck and you're trying to do that dragon theme, it might get one last hoorah because of this card. You're not forcing yourself into multiple colors to be able to play this next to Thunderbreak either. So again, not saying this card's going to be good. Not saying it's good. I still wouldn't buy it at $4, but it's plausible.
We've seen big dirtly dragons like this, just sort of, like Balefire Dragon from the last Innistrad. Everyone was sort of like, "Oh, Balefire, seven drop mythic dragons, bullshit." I wanted a real card as my mythic, not a dragon. And then Balefire Dragon's $8 now. So I'm not saying this will do that, but it just that kind of stuff can happen.
Yeah, and this one has a little more hope because it's a 4/5 flyer for 5, which isn't the greatest stats, but it does come with a pretty relevant ability that says "Don't kill me with removal" that can also target your creatures. So, I mean, deck relation stone's kind of annoying, I guess, because they get all the clue tokens, but they also lose their entire board. So,
yeah, we'll just have to see. I'm inclined to say that it's probably too expensive. Kind of feel that way about the next card, Bedlam Reveler. 6 colorless, 2 red for a 3/4, but it costs 1 colorless less for each instant and sorcery in your graveyard, and it has prowess. And when it enters the battlefield, discard your hand and draw 3 cards. So it certainly, you know, fills your yard. It rewards you for playing instants and sorceries. Can fill your hand back up if your hand's empty. So, partially fill your hand back up if your hand's empty. So, I don't know how to feel about this card. It's just, it's so weird.
I feel like it's overpriced, but I feel like it's a 2 of in, like, modern burn. And maybe it's just a sideboard card, but I think it's definitely potentially sees play in that burn archetype.
Interesting.
It could be 2 mana to play this.
Exactly. And I mean, at 2 mana as a burn deck, like, that's what I'm saying, maybe it's just a sideboard card where it's only good against control, because, like, you really don't want this in your opener most of the time, but this is not a bad card to draw on turn 3 or turn 4 when you've, you know, expelled those 5 to 6 spells, or expended those 5 to 6 spells, and suddenly you can play this gas back up for no downside at all, and you have a 3/4 body they have to deal with that only gets bigger as you cast those, you know, another lightning bolt.
I mean, it's certainly... Yeah. Curves well off of stuff like Monastery Swift Spear, but I don't know, man. I can't see a ton of scenarios where this hits like $10, and I'm like, man, I wish I paid, you know, $380.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, it's not like Delve where it takes those cards out of your graveyard, so every multiple copy after that is still the same 2 mana. So you could argue that it can be a 4 of in the decks that are going to play it. I don't know, maybe there's some cool combo, Jataxian Probe a ton of times, find these, keep running through your whole deck, kind of deck that exists out there in Modern or Legacy. That's the only way I could see this really maintain this $4. And that could be why it's $4, just because nobody really knows. There's a giant question mark on whether or not that deck exists.
There was a deck, but they banned it. It was Blue-Red Delver with Treasure Cruise. You would have play this on turn 2 or turn 3 and just be like, yes, you hate life.
But I'm saying, like, as of now, I don't know if there's any show that can actually support this.
I think the price is going into a dollar. It's going to hit there. I don't think it'll be complete bulk. I think there's a possibility that you can see it do something, but not really. So,
I think it sees at least enough fringe play and burn that it's not quite a bulk rare, but I just don't have any other decks that spring to mind right away where I'm just like, yeah, this could absolutely be played in that.
That makes me think, I kind of regret that they banned Treasure Cruise before somebody could develop a Jeskai colored deck called Cruising USA.
I don't know why I laughed at that. That wasn't that good. All right. Anyway, so the next card is not.
Because you're
good.
A dad. You just laughed at a dad joke.
Oh, God, that's why now. I didn't laugh.
That's probably it.
I remember where I didn't laugh.
This is Deploy the Gatewatch. This is the card that's four. White for your Planeswalkers. I've seen the unwritten for Planeswalkers kind of sorta in a way. So you look at the top seven cards of your library, put up to two Planeswalker cards from among them into the battlefield, put the rest at the bottom of your library in random order.
Random order. Yeah.
It's a little weird.
This is another one of those, I love this card, I would never pay $4 for it, sort of a card.
Well, it's three. Yeah. That's the best part. Even then.
And it's like $3 with a dollar shipping.
Yeah, it's $364 is the market price right now. I mean, this card's cute. I mean, somebody's going to want to try and live the dream in Modern of, like, putting a Nicol Bolas and Ugin into play at the same time or something crazy like that. Like, jam card in the deck, too.
You need this in a format where you have Scroll Rack, I think.
Yeah, I think you just don't play this card. Maybe in Commander, but it's got to be, like, a five-color all-Planeswalker Commander deck, even.
Well, you mean that thing that exists? Super right, Friends!
But I mean, still. That's still not... But one deck like that isn't going to keep it out of bowl.
Oh, no. That's, certainly, I'm not paying for $3.50 to $4 for that.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun, though, and I bet if... I bet when this goes to a dollar, the foils will be $2, and then that's when you buy the $2 foils.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I don't know, this could also, I guess it's a mythic, so it's not going to burn you as much, but like I'm still sitting on my foil plea for guidances waiting for that to hit for enchantments. But
it will. You look how long Dictate of Erebos took to go from 50 cents to $5. It'll happen.
Oh, yeah, and I'm sure. But I mean, this could be the same kind of card where you're just holding on to it for a couple of years, so be ready for that.
All right, another card you're going to hold on to for a few years, or are you? It's not a good segue. Where was the point I was going? Anyway, we got Hanweir Garrison. Is that how you spell it? Say that? Hanweir?
I think it's probably Hanweir, but they'd probably just say Hanweir. It seems German to me for some reason.
There you go. From an official German guy, he'll tell you.
It sounds kind of German to him.
Yep, in my expert opinion, it sounds a little bit kind of Germany. I don't know. It's probably Hanweir.
So this is a card that's 2/3. Or it costs 200 red, and whenever it attacks, put 2/1/1 red human creature tokens into the battlefield, tapped and attacking. Which is, that's actually not a bad card, in my opinion. And
certainly
then this
not.
Is also, plus you combine this with the land, and you get the flip card that turns into the Eldrazi Horror that when it attacks, it's the 6/3, and when it attacks, it puts 2/3/2 Eldrazi tokens into play. I think this card's you play, and I mean the land's not bad. So
the land actually, I kind of
like the land.
I like being able to give a creature haste in each deck. So, like Hall of the Bandit Lords gets played, so this has to go in red, which is too bad. But still, I think giving your Goblin Welder or your Kuldoth a Forge Master or something like that haste, I think that's desirable. So the land's at like $2. $2, $3, and I think their prices, at least in the short term, because it's going to be mostly based on standard, they're dependent on each other. But man, I really think the creature, the garrison, could be good enough to get there on its own, just because it's so much damage. Like,
yeah,
this might be the Goblin Rabble Master of the set, just because it plays a lot like Rabble Master.
Yep. Yeah, I'm wondering the same thing. Like the card. It's definitely not Rabble Master, but it could be Rabble Master in this format. I mean, it doesn't make a token the turn it comes into play. There's not really a good chance of you getting a 2-for-1 off of it unless it gets to attack. It has the downsides. But at the same time, like, it also doesn't force, you know, itself or the tokens to attack or anything like that afterwards. It's just whether or not red can actually deal with the green-white onslaught, I think. Like, it has to have cards like this to go wider. So if the deck is there, I think this is absolutely a part of it. And if it is a part of it, I think it's probably a $6 to $8 card because it's a 4-of. And that deck, if it can compete against it, definitely has the tools to continue to be good. But, again, giant question mark, just like the rest of the format. I think it really depends on if we can get over the hurdle of Collected Company and green-white to see these other decks break out. And I'm convinced that the Spirits deck can do it, but I'm not as convinced that the Werewolves or Red Green or Red X can do it.
So this could be a card like Rattleclaw, where it looks good. Maybe the deck's not there this time, but I mean, we got one set, and the next set we're going to see a rotation. We're going to lose Collected Company, and a lot of these cards that are making that green white such a powerful deck. So this could be something to pick up mid season when it drops down to a nice low price if it doesn't do anything.
And who? who knows, this may even end up in a collected company deck. I mean, we could just see like red green collected company three mana good stuff. I don't know if there's enough of it there. I definitely don't know that it rivals the Bant color things that you can do like Reflector Mage. But it's a plausible deck at least to try out. So, I mean, I think you'll see this card at the very least at FNM because it does do cool things with the land, but I'm not sure as far as the competitive level above that goes.
So Crypt Breaker was the hope or the glimmer of hope for the Zombies deck, but I don't think it's going to let it get there. This is the one black for a 1/1 zombie. You pay one a black, tap it, discard a card, put a 2/2 black zombie creature token into the battlefield. Currently at $3. Yeah, I just don't, the Zombies doesn't look like it's getting there. Maybe post rotation, maybe post rotation card, but yeah, I think you just let this one drop
it
down.
It needs like one more one drop to be good. The deck is so close. I mean, that's what I was saying. I was testing out with Liliana and stuff, just try different variants, maybe go a little more mid-range, because that's what the deck kind of has to do. It can go very wide. It can definitely compete with the tokens decks. It tends to not have as explosive of a go as, like, a collected company can. And so, like, if they have good collected companies, you're going to beat them. If they have poor collected companies, you have a pretty good shot of beating them. If they have good collected companies, they're going to beat you. If they have poor or just below average, slightly even, collected companies, I was seeing that Zombies was doing well. But I hate playing a deck that is relying on my opponent to not do well in order to win. So I would have to agree with you. I don't think Zombies is quite there. One drop.
It's still interesting to see that collected company is adding the Hearthstone to Magic. It's the, you know, the random element that's competitive playable.
Yep. All right. Oh, man, the next card I really like.
I like Crypt Breaker more than you guys, just for the record.
Yeah. You think it's standard playable?
No, probably not.
You just like it in, like, EDH, then. I mean, I could definitely see EDH decks that want it. I mean, that draw a card, pay a life. Like, anytime you have that, a zombie is a pretty popular general for a reason. I mean, everybody likes drawing cards. And black doesn't always have infinite access to that, so I can see the interest.
I mean, it's a third as good as a zombie in that capacity, but it doesn't make zombies, so I don't know. I don't know. It's a good madness enabler. It's a good way to fill up your yard with stuff. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah, zombie tokens are just easier to make than, you know, wizards are, so I could see populating enough zombies. You know, you get a Liliana off alt off or something like that and go crazy. But
yeah, zombie tokens are really easy to make. You just have Eric Klug do it. Zombie tokens by Eric Klug for sale at brainstormbrewery.com/store.
Hold up. They're not in stock right now. We got new ones coming in. We had to go to a new printer because the other printer went bad. We just got the new updated frames from the proxy guy. So we got new frames that's going to look real cool. Yeah, so that's going to be good. We'll have those hopefully by the end of the month. Wait, no, to the middle of July, probably the beginning of August, but, you know, it'll be announced. And then we also got the two new tokens that came out, so that'll all be part of it. But anyway, let's move on to Sigarda's Aid. This is the card
Sigarda's Aid, yeah.
Woo-wee!
May cast auras and equipment spells as though they had flash. Whenever an equipment enters the battlefield under your control, you may attach it to target creature you control, making it an aura of sorts. This whole one mana enchantment cycle is really interesting to me. I think they're all potentially very good. We already have, and this is complete FNM level. I don't think this is like tier one deck or anything like that, but we have what the toll guy that you could pay zero to equip everything to him. And now, you know, you have an instant speedway to be able to play these cards, which really I think solves a lot of the problems of like, all right, you know, am I going to, are you going to, like, play an equipment this turn, or are you going to get your creature down and then, like, spend two more turns to do it? Now you can kind of dictate a lot of these things at instant speed, especially since your equipment attaches right away, so you're not worried about the extra cost put into it. And it's only a one-mana enchantment, so it doesn't really stop your curve or stop anything else you're doing. You only need to find one of them, and it's not like your game plan is completely destroyed if you don't have this card because you have that toll guy, too. The real question is how many good equipments we have. And I think this set provides us with a couple, but we also have some, like, Captain's Claws and stuff like that. So, I mean, again, I don't think this is a tier one deck by any means, but I think at FNM you will definitely see some red-white equipment decks popping up. And I think it was almost there before, and this definitely, you know, puts it there. And there's enough support pieces for it that people haven't really thought about. Like, there's the guy from Origins, I mean, no, he's from Oath, actually, who gives all your creatures +1/+0, I think, if you have an equipment in play. There's a couple other cards that do similar things, so it's just kind of a cool archetype that snuck up on us.
Ryan, what if I told you that there was a format where every aura and every equipment ever printed was fair game?
Woo!
I would want to play it until you told me it was EDH, and then I just not consider anything going on.
You mean, like, you mean Legacy, where I play Stoneforge Mist and go get a Vatter Skull?
I mean,
yeah, that imagine would this suck. Enchantress. Ooh, nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's only auras. It's not enchantments.
Oh.
So I mean, in some ways it would work, but some of your spells are definitely auras, but some of them are not. But I mean, either way, like, this card, it's just, anytime I see a one mana card with this, I don't want to say powerful, but this versatile of an effect, as far as, I mean, you're getting the free equip cost out of it. So even if you equip one time for free, you've already gotten the one mana out of this, plus probably the tempo to provide it to, like, make up for the one card. And the fact that your opponent now has to be careful on your turn, or on their turn, that you could just, you know, end of turn play X equipment that they didn't have any clue was coming, and it's already equipped to your creature, untap, play another equipment, and they could just be dead. They don't know.
Yeah, but then it revolves around having this one card coming out.
But it doesn't, though, because there's enough other cards there. Like I said, the toll guy that you can pay zero to equip everything to him. I think this created the redundancy that wasn't there before.
I see.
In order to make that archetype viable. And again, like I said, disclaimer, F&M level. I would love to see it break out and be more competitive, but I just, like, it doesn't really go wide well enough, I think, to beat green-white tokens. But it's definitely got to be a blast to play. Like, I've tried to write about it once before, and I just couldn't quite come up with a shell, and I feel like it's finally there.
Still, sell them at $3 or $2.
Oh, yeah. You sell them for sure.
My prediction is this is a bulk rare that's $5 in 18 to 24 months.
That sounds good.
Yeah, I could see that. Sounds very reasonable. Oh, man, this card's this cheap? I think I'm just going to buy these.
Oh, you looking at Mausoleum Wanderer?
No, I'm looking at the next card that is a mythic that is $277. Yeah, I'm buying these.
Yeah, it's this set's Gitrog monster. He's talking about Ishkanah Graph Widow, the spider monster. It's a legendary spider creature, and even though it's mono green at four colors and a green, it's got a black activation in it, which means you can play it in a green-black EDH deck. So it has reach, and it's a 3/5, and it has delirium. And when it enters the battlefield, if there are four or more card types among cards in your graveyard, you put 3/1/2 green spider creature tokens with reach onto the battlefield. And then for 6 colors and a black, target opponent lose 1 life for each spider you control. So there was already a guy who had a spider deck that he was super jazzed about, and he was running, I forget what his general was. I've seen people run Doran as a spider general, but like this is dumb because you could just play like a dredgy spider spawning type deck, and then you play spider spawning for like 20 and then just start doming people for their life total. So I think this is going to be a lot of fun to build around. I think rebuying it to get a bunch of the 1/2 spider tokens is going to be good. I think just playing just a ton of spiders, and then even if you're paying 7 mana to hit them for like 5, and then you've got a big impenetrable wall of spiders that are like silk lashing all their flyers down, and like they can't really attack through them because your toughness is so high. Yeah, I don't understand why this is so cheap. But again, we've seen cards like Tazri that are super good but super narrow. I don't think this goes in a lot of decks where it's not the general. So, you know, maybe $2-ish bucks is probably correct on this. Like, we haven't seen a ton of legendary tribal creatures really get there just on the basis of EDH, so I can't imagine this is that different. So the price is probably about right, but it certainly is an exciting card, and it's going to make a bunch of other stuff go up in price if it gets built a lot. So usually what's relevant about cards like this isn't the card itself, but everything else around it that it's going to kind of push up. So be checking my articles for what I think this could do.
The standard, I mean, if the Grim Flayer is, what, a $10, $12 card right now, and Delirium is a thing, this seems like a good topper for Delirium. There's a lot of bodies on there. You got that mid-range-y type of deck. I mean, you got, what, a lot of power, 6 power on 5. Yeah, it seems like it could get there. So, I mean, but if that's the case, then you should see the two prices converge closer together. Or is this a, because this will probably just be a two of or selling that.
Day. I don't think so. I mean, maybe I'm just high on this card, but like, since I've seen it, everything I've put together with Delirium, like, this is the card that breaks open the game. This card, it lets you stall out the game versus the tokens decks. It comes with its own win condition. It's, and I mean, it's not really that slow because those decks don't really have ways to gain life. So you're already winning there. It blocks Gisela extremely nicely, which is really like the big thing that like they're going to be pushing if they have flyers at all. And you're already going to catch like all of the, spirits decks that are going to be coming out. Like this, it just, it avoids a lot of the removal. If you hit the Delirium, awesome, but this card's, it's not great if you don't, obviously, but it's still playable. And if your deck can consistently hit that Delirium and you're hitting, you know, 85, 90% of the time once you cast this on turn 5, this card's super powerful. I think this is potentially the most underrated card in the set, actually. I didn't realize it was this cheap. I thought this card would sit around 10 bucks.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, it does
block
Abyssin.
I mean, it's a legend, but I think it's a 4 of legend in the decks you can support it. Because this is a card where they are going to want to kill it. Like, nothing of theirs gets through. And then you cast another one, and you have 3 more spiders on top of it. And then you start pinging them for 7, or for 5, or for even for 4 at a time. It doesn't matter. But it also creates your own army. So if you're playing against a control deck, suddenly every time you cast one of these, it's a board they have to answer. Even if they just kill the main guy, they're still taking 3 a turn from these little guys. And those are the kind of cards I want to see out of these kind of mid-range decks, is where it's good against control, it's good against aggro, it's good against the mid-range mirror matches. I think this card's phenomenal all around. It's like I'm buying $250 worth right now. So
okay, so buy it if you want them. They're going to go up just based upon that alone. I mean not saying that you're pumping the market, but you know, you're showing your faith into the card. And
yeah, I mean, I've bought a couple of cards. I have not bought a single card from this set as far as on pre-order goes. Maybe I'm crazy on this one, but from the testing I've seen done, and this card seems like it's going to get there. I mean, even if it's a 2 of in a couple of decks, like, Delirium's not going to be that hard to hit. If you start looking at game states even now outside of, like the green white deck, you'll notice that, like, you know, Planeswalker is a creature type. Those hit your graveyard pretty regularly. It's not hard to get a land in there. If you hit a creature on top of that, all you have to do is instant or sorcery. It's really not difficult to turn on Delirium. And then you also have the benefit of, like, some of the decks are running things like Oath of Nissa, so you have enchantment on top of that. So really,
or Eldritch Evolution. You got also, yeah, you got 2. That's a sorcery and then a creature into your graveyard. You got your turn 1, Evolving Wilds. You just need to have 1 other card in there. And all of a sudden on turn 4, you got this nasty creature just hidden. Yeah, I can see that happening.
Yeah. I like this does come off of Eldritch Evolution very nicely. You can Meta Reshaper into this as well.
Yeah,
I mean, and that's just gross. So you're like flipping a 3-drop on top of putting this into play and getting the Delirium effect. But I mean, like I said, in those late games, like, it comes with its own win con. So it's not just like you're building up a bunch of bodies either and just doing nothing with them. So like, if you're playing against those stall out wide, go wide decks, this helps you survive on top of actually killing your opponent. And I think that's a huge key.
And the 2 angels, like, Avacyn can't get through it. And if you flip Avacyn, you can still be able to trade with Avacyn. So. Yeah, it seems. Yeah, all right. I'll actually buy some of these cards. I'll get like 4. I'll see what happens.
This could be Thragtusk, and Thragtusk was definitely underpriced at presale. Like, people make mistakes. This could be underpriced.
I think everyone's so excited about the angel and stuff that they're not really looking at the rest of the format. And I think this card gets there very nicely, and also happens to counter everything that everyone else is excited about. So, yeah.
All right, you sold me. I'm in. So, Mausoleum's Wanderer? How do you say it?
Mausoleum. This is the card I think is actually a little underpriced. Maybe I'm just waiting for that Spirits deck to materialize, but this is a 1-drop, 1/1 Flying Spirit. So, historically, stuff that's that aggressive has been played before. But this guy's special, because whenever another Spirit enters the battlefield on your control, Mausoleum Wanderer gets +1/+1 till end of turn. And you can sack him to counter an instant or sorcery unless its controller pays X, where X is Mausoleum Wanderer's power. So that can kind of prevent them from sort of the blowing you out with spells if you're doing a bunch of stuff with spirits on your turn. I don't know. I kind of wish this grew permanently, but just having a good 1-drop that can like attack for 3 sometimes in like a spirit shell. I kind of think if the spirit deck materializes, this is going to be a four of and could be like $5. But
I see a higher upside on the Graph Widow, but yeah, I see what you're saying. This is a good one drop for the spirits deck.
But I mean, worst case scenario, it's a Judge's Familiar. So if your Judge's Familiar with upside, like we've seen Judge's Familiar be relevant in the Thassa deck, just because you wanted all the blue pips. I think a 1/1 flyer with upside, especially if its power can get more, because you play it on curve and then all of a sudden you're swinging for two or three when you're playing more spirits later.
I can see it being like a 2/2 for at least the first four rounds, you know, constantly playing until you drop the new Mistbind click. But yeah.
And I don't know. I think it, like, if you can get these around $2, I think it's not the worst.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the only thing that makes me hesitate is the fact that it's obviously, like, only for a spirits deck, which, you know, maybe there's some eternal spirits deck that we don't know about yet. I mean, everyone's talking about, like, Tallow Wisp and potentially there being something there, but, I mean, that's been talked about before, too. This could be the push, though. This is a one-mana spirit. We have this and Toppelgeist, both fine spirits and standard. I think spirits has to be excessively dominant for this card to hit that price in standard. And, you know, we're in that age of rares where even a 4 of in a good deck, you see something like Thalia's Lieutenant was mentioned earlier, where it's difficult to keep up with that price. And I think that there's a chance that this card sees that price spike day 1 or day 2, or, you know, week 1 or week 2. But whether or not that holds, I don't think. I think if you buy them now, you definitely want, or if you trade for them at 2, then you definitely want to dump them if they hit that 5 immediately. But I don't think it holds there.
Yeah, that seems fair. Yeah, that's fine. I just, I don't know, was surprised to see it not a little bit closer to some of the other spirits. But there aren't too many cards left that I'm excited about, but there are a few.
That's fair. Speaking of exciting cards, I like the next one. I like the Elder Fiend more, but Distended Mindbender is 8 mana for a 5/5 with Emerge for 5 in black. Whenever you cast it, target opponent reveals his or her hand. You choose a non-land card with converted mana cost 3 or less, and a card with converted mana cost 4 or greater. That player discards those cards. I'm kind of surprised it's not Exile, but I guess that maybe is too good as an enabler for things like Blight Herder and stuff, although that deck never really got there, so maybe they should give something powerful to that. I don't know. What do you guys think about this card? I feel like as long as there's a way to cast it pretty consistently on 5, it's fits either nicely in with Thought Not Seer or replaces it in some decks?
I think it's going to whiff more often than you would hope. I mean, I can see in a dream situation being really nice, but it still is like...
What do you mean by whiff? Do you mean get 0 of the modes, or do you think get one of the two modes?
Just one of the two. I think one of the two is okay. You really want to get the 2 of the 2 for it to just...
I mean, I think you're almost always going to hit one of the 2. If you don't hit one of the 2, your opponent's hand is all lands.
Yeah. But, I mean, you're going to get one of the 2, which is okay. I think
Yeah.
I mean, you refer to that as whiffing.
Yeah, I think one of the two is whiffing. I think 2 of the 2 is which is not whiffing. Complete 1/0 is completely the same.
Yeah, it really depends what you sacrifice. If you sack a Matter Reshaper, I don't think you're going to consider that a whiff. But if you sack a real creature to play this on curve, yeah, you might not be too excited about only getting like a one mana spell or something like that. So we'll have to see. This could be too cheap, certainly.
Yeah, I think this. I think if Elder Fiend is only at $5, this can sit at $3 very nicely. I think if we see Elder Fiend start going up and that archetype in general gets better, this definitely could follow that, because I think you're either going to see it in the same deck or in a similar deck. But, I mean, if that card can't really top it, I think it's unlikely this card's better. Maybe I'm wrong, though. Maybe this card is like the sleeper and Elder Fiend is actually way worse than people think.
Well, it's worth talking about, definitely. And we've got to really see how these Emerge cards unfold, because just the ability to cheat them in makes them hard to evaluate.
Oh, yeah. There's a bunch of question marks in this set.
And Collected Effort. Is there a question mark about this card? I like it.
I think it's good. I don't think I like it being compared to Dromoka's Command like everyone's trying to, because it's a sorcery, and that's it's a real big difference. I understand that it can do more powerful things than Dromoka's Command in some cases, but it's also much more corner case on when this card is great.
Yeah, it's good because you don't have to spend additional mana to boost up the Escalate. So what this card does is one white for sorcery Escalate card. You get to choose one or more modes. One of the destroy target creature with power 4 or greater, destroy target enchantment, or put a 1/1 counter on each creature target player controls.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like more often than not, this is going to be a 3-mana destroy target creature with power 4 or greater, which is not great. And I mean, when you're ahead, sure, it can push you further ahead, but this card is not good when you're behind at all. It's not Dromoka's Command. It's not going to 2-for-1 most of the time for you. I mean, it's also sorcery speed again, so those creatures that you're tapping, it's not like you can block, tap, and then put a +1/+1 counter on them.
Yeah, the 250 just that doesn't sound good.
Yeah, I'm not sold. I mean, at 2-mana, I would like it maybe more. 3-mana also just feels kind of clunky because, again, it's competing with everything else as a 3-mana right now, Nissa and all these other cards and those token decks.
If this hits bulk, I want all of them. Like, it's so dumb. You're going to do all three of those modes in an EDH game. Like, you're gonna hit all three of those when you play this.
Yep.
You're just going to boost your whole team, or you're going to boost somebody else at the table's team. You're going to kill a dude, and you're going to destroy an enchantment. If this card said artifact or enchantment, or it were an instant, like, it would be pretty busted. As it is, I just think it does a lot of stuff. It only takes up one slot in your deck. So, as a commander dude, absolutely, I think this card is pretty good. And if it hits bulk, I think you trade for him.
So it looks like we're approaching the bulk now.
I don't think we need to talk about Slayer's Cleaver. I think that's mostly just a pricing algorithm issue because
that's people charging 23 cents and $3 for shipping.
Yeah, although Slayer's Cleaver, to be noted, potentially an uncommon to pull out, as it may end up on a buy list, or this may be an accident. But I would still not throw them away in your bulk at your pre-release.
No, it's because it's a cheap uncommon, and nobody's going to charge 45 cents for shipping for it the way they would with Selfless Spirit, which, if the spirit deck materializes, could be a buy at a buck. Hammer Battlements, we talked about before. I think Imprisoned in the Moon, you wait for it to get bulk.
Yeah, Collective Brutality is pretty eh.
I want every Mind's Dilation. Holy shit.
Yeah, that's right. This is the big mythic, huh?
A $1.82 market price for Mind's Dilation. That means the foils will be 5, probably? Whew!
The one card I think there's a giant question mark on is Lupine Prototype.
I think the art looks not like a Magic card. It looks like one of those games they came up with in the 90s that made like one expansion set.
Yeah. Yeah, I can agree with that. But I mean,
it's cool though.
People are already talking about it in Affinity and Modern, which, yeah, it's cool there. It's another thing that gets you around like the Stony Silence locks. But it also may be plausible to be played in Standard. I mean, you have Asylum Visitor and some other cards that can definitely play off of that empty hand, and you have ways to get your hand empty very quickly in an aggressive shell. So it's not, you know, impossible if this card is good in Standard either. I just think that right now it's sitting at that like $1.50 range, which means you can probably trade for them at $1. I don't like going deep on this with cash, but I like picking these up at a buck at the pre-release.
Yeah, it's suspicious tech, right? We've seen that phrase, suspicious tech. I think Harmless Offering is another bulk rare I'm super interested in. Gaia Reach Sanitarium, that reminds me an awful lot of a card that says both players draw a card. That was a land from the Kamigawa block. That's like $10 now. I don't think this will be $10, but I think the fact that it makes everybody loot instead of just straight drawing means if you're in a position to benefit from looting and your opponent isn't, you're going to be way better off than they are. So I think Gaia Reach Sanitarium is definitely a card at around a buck I'm super interested in. Coax from the Blind Eternities is a tutor. You want that. Thalia's Lancers may be my favorite card in the set.
What about Oda Liliana? It's $1 for EDH. Is it going to go lower?
It's the worst one. I think you would play it just to complete the set. I'm not super excited about Oda Liliana. Making every player sacrifice a creature is pretty brutal, but then like just getting a zombie when you play a planeswalker is, I don't know. I mean, I need to reevaluate in terms of the other one, which I haven't looked at in a while. But I mean, a buck is probably about right.
Yeah,
but Athalia's Lancers, it's stupid. And I think if it's going to be 50 cents, then I want me some $2 foils because it searched for any legendary card, not just a legendary creature. So you could get Sarah's Sanctum, you could get Godsend, you could get Umezawa's Jitte. You could get your half of Brazella that you need. Like, there's a lot that Thalia's Lancers can do. And the fact that it's in Eldrazi Displacer and Miss Metal Witch colors, like, sign me up.
All right. So yeah. There we go. We're near the end. Anything you want to add in or chip in, Ryan?
I mean, I think the only other card that I really see that may be too cheap is Summary Dismissal. It is currently bulk, pretty much 79 cents, and it is the 2 blue-blue, exile other spells and counter all abilities. If we see enough of these decks going big, trying to cast these Eldrazi, or you see the, you know, Deep Elder Fiend deck, and that becomes popular, this is going to be your best counter to any of those decks out there. It shuts down the cast ability as well. So, watch for that. It is definitely, you know, because it's only mono blue, it's playable in a number of decks. It does cost 4 mana, so it's a little more, you know, it's not a 3 mana counter like we've been seeing recently with a lot of stuff. So you're definitely playing against a certain metagame. But I think if that metagame's there, this card sees enough sideboard play that it's definitely going to pull itself out of bulk. And it's pretty cool. I mean, it stops everything. It's not, time stop? It's not that, but I mean, it's very, as far as cleaning up a muddled stack goes, very close. But yeah, I think that was it for me. That was probably the only other card I was super excited about as far as these super cheap things go. I mean, there's a number of other things like Voldaren Pariah that could be very good, but I think it only sees play in one deck anyway, and that's probably just not enough to pull it up out of bulk.
Identity Thief is too cheap, probably.
You think
so? I don't know. It's probably a bulk rare. I just really like it.
Yeah, I think that's the commander-only cards, definitely, at least right off the bat, we aren't going to hit it, but I think that there's a good chance for a number of them long-term, which is going to be pretty sweet.
Yeah, they never hit, which gives you like a year and a half to 2 years to get the stuff. And then everyone's like, yeah, how could this not have been this much all this time? And you're like, well, we definitely had a long time to buy in. So there's a lot of these cards I'm watching. I'm just going to wait for them to hit their floor. And then you just trade for them. You got 2 years to do it. It's amazing. So, you know, I've definitely got a big old box full of Dictative Erebos and the Master of the Pearl Trident and all kind of stuff like that that I've just been trading for. So I like when those cards hit $5 later.
Yeah,
certainly. Yeah. I think there are quite a few of the bulk rares in this set that could hit that eventually. And like some of the $2 rares that are going to go to bulk and then go back up, I think. Definitely Sigarda's Aid. I think Sigarda's Aid is a $5 card waiting to happen.
Agreed. I think this is a good set to watch the commons and commons as well. There's a lot of them that are just good. I mean, there's things like Gnarlwood Dryad where, yeah, it's just a 1-1 Death Touch guy with the Delirium +2/+2, but there's nothing that, you know, like that card had just has pick written all over it. First off, it's a 1-1 Death Toucher. Typhoid Rats through like 4 printings was still on buy list. And it has a relevant ability that comes along with that. It's, you know, it's no Nimble Mongoose, but it's a cool effect. And I think it's, you know, potentially standard playable if that Delirium deck is good and, you know, has casual play outside of that. So there's just cards like that that you got to watch for. And I'm not even going to list off all of them because there's so many in the set. But really just kind of be more cautious with your draft chaff this time around. I wouldn't, you know, cards that you think are bulk, maybe take a second look at because there's a lot of applications for things outside of standard in the set.
Yeah, News Constrictor, that Crop Sigil, stuff like that. I think there are some gems in here. So, yeah, definitely pick your draft chaff.
Chaff. You like chaff.
Chicka, chicka, chaff.
So tune in next week to an interview cast. And that gives us a whole week off. So we get like a free vacation in a way. And then somewhere down the line, you'll see episode 200. And it'll be there. Who knows? This week off may give me time to work on it. You may see it right after episode 202.
Maybe you won't. We owe you nothing. Unless you're a Patreon, then we owe you.
Yeah, we got stuff coming your way. Keep saying that, but we do.
we're the literal worst.
we are really bad, actually.
We need to hire somebody.
We do.
Just do that. Just email us every week like, hey, when are you going to do this? Money Draft has its own CPA. Brainstorm Brewery needs its own Brainstorm Secretary. Yeah.
Figure it out. Anyway, see you guys. And thank you for joining us for yet another wonderful episode and a set review. And we'll see how many of these cards we're going to be wrong because we're going to be wrong about so many.
Yeah, well, it's a tough set, man. It is a tough set. It really, honestly, if we're wrong on these cards, it's because, like, the players playing the decks didn't do what we thought they were going to do, and it's their fault.
Well put.
Frankly.
Meantime, I'm about to go catch some Pokemon.